evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 6, 2018. A military court in South Sudan sentences soldiers to prison for raping and killing a journalist 2 years ago.
The military court has found out that the accused who are now present before us here are guilty for their direct responsibility in committing these crimes.
And a South Sudanese legal expert says the verdict sends a message.
So such behaviors of soldiers going to rape or commit other kind of crime needs to be discouraged, and the SPLA leadership must make sure that whenever allegations of rape is brought to their attention, they must act promptly.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudan military court today sentenced 10 soldiers to prison for raping aid workers and murdering a local journalist in July 2016 during an attack on Terrain Hotel in Juba. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Witnesses told the court armed men attacked the Terrain Hotel for several hours while aid workers called UN peacekeepers stationed less than a mile away, begging for help. The peacekeepers did not arrive. Kenyan Lieutenant General Johnson Mogoa Kimani Ondieki, commander of the UN peacekeeping mission, was fired shortly after the incident. A translator is speaking for presiding judge Brigadier General Judge Knight Bariano, says the court found the 10 soldiers guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
The military court has found out that the accused who are now present before us here
مذنبين
are guilty
لمسؤوليتهم المباشرة
for their direct responsibility
في ارتكاب هذه الجرائم
in committing these crimes.
Initially, 12 suspects accused of looting, murder, rape, and other charges appeared in court in May of 2017. Today, Judge Bariano sentenced 2 of the accused to life in prison, 2 other soldiers to 14 years in prison, and 5 others to 10 years behind bars.
الحكم.
The verdict.
العزل لرتبة الجندي.
Strip to the rank of private.
الطرد من الخدمة بالجيش الشعبي بدون حقوق ما بعد الخدمة.
Expel from the SPLA without due rights.
السجن لمدة 10 سنوات اعتبارا من تاريخ حبسه وهو 7 أكتوبر 2016.
Imprisonment for 10 years right from the date he was taken to the custody on the 7th of October 2016.
يرسل إلى السجن المدني لقضاء مدة السجن.
He is to be sent to the civil prison to serve the term of his imprisonment.
One soldier, Akol Aken, was set free due to a lack of evidence against him. A military commander accused of overseeing the attack died in prison last October in what the army described as a natural death. The court ordered the government to pay 51 head of cattle as blood compensation to the bereaved family of slain journalist John Gatluak and ordered the South Sudan government to pay each rape victim $4,000. And Judge Bariano ordered the government to pay more than $2 million to the owner of the Terrain Hotel for damages.
One. تدفع حكومة جمهورية جنوب السودان
The government of the Republic of South Sudan will pay
ممثلة في وزارة الدفاع وقدام المحاربين
represented in the Ministry of Defense and Veteran Affairs
مبلغ وغدره
an amount of
2 million
2 million
و258,000
and 258,000
و590
and 590
و48
and 48
دولار أمريكي
US dollar
للشاكي السيد مايكل وود
to the complainant Mr. Mike Wood.
Wood says he is happy to know the criminals will be going to prison.
The rapists have gone to prison. I think that's a good thing. I'm happy that the family of the victim who got murdered, I'm very happy that family is being compensated. And I'd like to also say how helpful the government have been over the course of the last couple of years. This has been a long process, but the government have been very, very, very helpful. I think it takes a lot for a country to arrest their own soldiers, and I'm very happy that they did it. They've been very helpful. Due process was followed, and the government of South Sudan should be commended because they genuinely have been very helpful through the last 2 years.
Attorney Peter Malwal, who represented the accused, says he rejects the court's verdict and will appeal.
I'm going to use Section 88, Subsection 2, by appealing this court decision to Supreme Court of South Sudan for the following just two reasons. Number one, according to Section 85 of SPLA Act 2008, there is no such sentence that you can chase somebody from the SPLA and you deprive himself of what is called the benefit after his retirement. Also, the court imposed that what is called blood compensation, idea. You cannot impose blood compensation while you put the person to imprisonment for 20 years. According to 206, I mean Section 206.
Under South Sudan law, the accused have 15 days to appeal their sentences. SPLA Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Santo Domich called the ruling an eye-opener for all SPLA soldiers. He says it should be a warning to other soldiers and commanders that they will be held responsible and accountable for any criminal behavior they exercise while on duty. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudanese lawyers say today's verdict should serve as a wake-up call to the South Sudan Army and other organized forces who act with impunity, committing human rights abuses in the country. Wake's Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Issa Muzamil Sebit, an independent lawyer who represented some of the victims in the Terrain Hotel case, says he believes justice has been served. He says the verdict was based on Penal Code 2008 and SPLA Act 2009 and should pave the way for ending impunity when crimes are committed in South Sudan. But Sebit says he believes many South Sudanese have suffered similar abuses and are yearning for justice. He advises the SPLA to work toward repairing its image of repeatedly committing human rights abuses, including rape and murder.
This is a special case for Terrain, but there are so many victims of such assaults in South Sudan. This one is a special case because most of the victims were international members of the international community members. But what if they were South Sudanese? Should we keep quiet because there's nobody to talk or to fight for them? So all this kind of sexual assault, whether directed against men or women, is unacceptable under the law.
South Sudanese lawyer Philip Sanyang represented Terrain Hotel owner Mike Woodwood during the trial.
With this verdict, we have hope to say that there's hope within our judicial institutions.
Sebit also says today's verdict should be an eye-opener to South Sudanese security forces who commit human rights abuses across the country. Colonel Santo Domich is the deputy military spokesman.
The warning that the SPLA would like to give to its ranks and files at all the capacities is that the SPLA will not tolerate acts of rape or any other forms of sexual assault directed against women and other vulnerable people committed by its troops in Terrain Hotel or any other places. Any person who commits similar act will be dealt with accordingly with the law.
Sebit says if South Sudan's military is to ever participate in future international engagements, including peacekeeping operations, its military leaders must create a disciplined army.
You never know, one day the SPLA could be asked to send forces outside. So such behaviors of soldiers going to rape or commit other kinds of crime needs to be discouraged. And the SPLA leadership must make sure that whenever allegations of rape is brought to their attention, they must act promptly.
The U.S. Embassy in Juba released a statement saying it welcomes today's verdicts but urges South Sudan's leaders to ensure they bring to justice other perpetrators of human rights abuses during the five-year conflict. The embassy went on to say the United States will, quote, continue to utilize tools including targeted sanctions to take action against those who attempt to sow chaos, work against peace, and commit serious human rights abuses in South Sudan, end of quote. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Today's verdict come more than 2 years after the raid on Terrain Hotel. Safe Magango, Amnesty International's Deputy Director for East Africa, says this verdict represents a first step towards ending chronic impunity in South Sudan.
Thousands of people killed, over a million displaced, and no one has been brought to book for all those violations. So this is the first time that has happened. I think that will be a starting point to addressing all the impunity that has characterized this conflict.
Amnesty International released a report in mid-2017 that said that sexual violence in South Sudan is, quote, on a massive scale. And the report said at least thousands of women and girls and some men have been raped since the start of violence in 2013. And yet, as you just said, this is the first case where perpetrators have been brought to justice. Rape victims in the country often don't get justice. What do you think this says about the justice system in the country?
What it says about the justice system of the country at the moment, I think to a certain extent, I would say, it shows that the justice system is willing to start taking cases seriously. So this is the first time. So all credit to the military court. Looks like justice has been done in this case. And that possibly will be, and we hope that will be the spirit going forward, even in criminal court, to try and bring perpetrators to justice in other cases.
I want to talk about John Gutluck now. He was a South Sudanese journalist who was murdered during the attack. And he was more than a journalist. He was a husband and a father. Does today's decision bring justice to his loved ones?
I wouldn't speak for them, but I think the court has spoken and it has deemed it fit to impose the penalty it has imposed. I would hope that that brings a level of closure for the family, but really I can't speak for them.
Saif, what do you think it is about this particular case that has sparked so much outrage and a demand for justice, not just in South Sudan, but internationally?
This case is quite emblematic of the attitude that humanitarian workers have faced. In a way, it really goes to the crux of the violence and the attitude of the government at the time that these crimes were committed. And really, in any jurisdiction, in any country, kill someone, to shoot someone in cold blood and gang rape women, that is something that would be bring a lot of condemnation and would be unacceptable. That is to say also that justice should not only stop with this case, because you'll have many people will have said, I know what these people have, because it's because they were foreigners that justice has been done. I think it is important that we also start to see justice in cases where South Sudanese women and men have been raped and violated. And I think it's possible, especially if the South Sudanese government does what it promised to do in the first place, and works with the African Union to set up the Arbitral Court for South Sudan to prosecute all crimes committed during this conflict.
That's Saif Magango, Amnesty International's Deputy Director for East Africa. He was speaking to Ayen Bior from Nairobi. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, civil society activists are calling on the warring parties to respect ceasefire. We'll bring that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Name one skill you think everyone should learn.
I think everyone should learn to read. Yeah, because I don't think life is even possible without reading.
Know how to cook and also learn how to ride bicycles.
What I can say is the biggest skill is agriculture, when a person is supporting an agricultural process. if you are digging and you have a garden, you use that to attract for cultivation. I can say it is a good skill.
Everyone should know how to drive in case of emergency. You have your friend sick or your mother sick, so you can drive faster to go to the hospital.
If everyone has the skill of listening, there will be no conflict. We don't listen, we just talk.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Civil society representatives at the South Sudan peace talks in Khartoum are condemning the continued fighting among warring parties in the country. In a statement issued last night, activists say the fighting is a clear violation of the ceasefire agreement signed in Khartoum. Michael Atit has more for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Rajab Muhandis, a member of the Civil Society Task Force at the peace talks, says his group has credible information that forces belonging to the parties to the agreement have clashed several times over the past few days around Yei River State and the former Unity State. In an inclusive interview with this program, Muhandis says due to the fighting, one humanitarian worker lost his life.
This is a complete violation, intentional violation of the provisions of the agreements already signed, particularly the agreement on cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians and humanitarian access signed in December, and also a complete violation of the provisions of the Khartoum Declaration Agreement, particularly on permanent ceasefire.
Muhandis says the continued fighting among parties sends a negative signal about the parties' commitment to the agreement they signed. He says many individuals and groups support the ongoing peace efforts.
These incidences of confrontations among the forces in the country are consistent with what has been happening since the peace agreement was signed in August 2015. And because of those fightings and military confrontations, the agreement was not fully implemented. In fact, it ended up collapsing.
Muhandis says South Sudanese have suffered for too long and don't want to see a return to war again.
Now, with this violence, it makes them lose hope and confidence and trust in this peace process. We do not want this agreement to fail. A lot of efforts have been invested. And so we hope that the parties will listen to these voices. But most importantly, we feel that IGAD should take immediate action on this. We cannot allow this violence to continue while people are negotiating peace and making commitments to end the conflict.
Muhandis says the peace process is already at the last stage, and parties and other all stakeholders should renew their commitment to fully implementing the agreement. He says the South Sudanese people want to see a real commitment from their political leaders to end fighting and restore lasting peace across the country. The government and various opposition groups signed a draft revitalized peace agreement in Khartoum last week, which include a cessation of hostilities agreement. The IGAD Council of Ministers has yet to approve the draft before handing it over to IGAD Head of State for adoption. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit, in Khartoum, Sudan.
Meanwhile, here in Washington, another South Sudanese activist who is part of the Young African Leadership Initiative, also known as the Mandela Fellowship, says he has learned new things about cultural diversity and tolerance. Lopai Sambro says the politics of ethnicity is the root cause of the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. Sambro says young South Sudanese should work towards promoting cultural diversity as one way of addressing the conflict.
One thing I love about the United States is the way people adhere to the system and make them accountable to the laws and the constitution of the of United States. So you find somebody is scared to do something because the law will get him or her. And that is one thing that I love from the people of the United States. But also there are other things that I feel the United States has gone too far and they should not really, because when it comes to the level of engagement, there are too many policies concerning personal space. And when it comes to that privacy, coming from an African setup where we live among people and we're always jolly, and coming to a United States setup, you realize that some people don't easily interact with others.
Let's leave that aside. You've been here, now you are attached to an institution that is doing peace building, or rather looking at issues of conflict around the world. What have you learned?
As a peace builder and trying to work together with my team to take IMPs to the next level, like make sure everyone gets engaged in it, USIP has taught me too many skills, including how to assess situations and conflicts. So, because sometimes the way we look at conflicts, we look at the outside part of the conflict, like, so we have these people who have issues and their issues have to be solved. We don't look at the why and the why and the why after that why. Why is this conflict happening? And takes us back to the situation in South Sudan. When we look at how people are trying to work on the negotiations, people don't really look at why is this conflict happening.
And now that you have all this knowledge,
yes,
could you tell us why we are where we are?
So I think why we are where we are is because we have not looked at the root causes of our problems.
What are the root causes?
We have a lot of tribal sentiments, and then the way we govern ourselves is more tribally attached than looking at a national setup.
And how do we detach ourselves from our tribes? Because you are born in a tribe. That's where you belong.
Yes.
How do you detach yourself from it?
You cannot easily detach yourself from your tribe, because appreciating that is very good. But I think we need to inculcate into our communities the sense of cultural diversity, and making sure that the differences in our cultures should not be a cause of conflict. You know, it should be the culture that we should appreciate, to let people learn from us. Not that, okay, so I belong to this kind of community. Mm-hmm. I must defend my community in a way that will make the other community look like a bad community. So every cultural setup is good in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciating these cultural differences will bring out the sense of our unity as South Sudanese. So the kind of rulership right now we do have is inculcating into the citizens the fact that other tribes are bigger than others, and you have to defend your tribe no matter what.
But how do you teach people who believe in their communities than in the nation? Because I've seen young people in Juba, I've interacted with a lot of young people in different occasions, and if you're not loyal to your community, they call you a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
They will say you are a curse. Now, how do you teach somebody like that?
Now, of course, now there are people who teach their communities that they are sellouts, but there are always some people in those communities who try to teach the good values. So if many people who do community engagement try to focus now on the good values that we do have from childhood to this generation right now that we do have, if these good values keep on coming, we know, of course, there will be those who might not benefit from these values because of how deeply rooted they are. But the more we try to do in the communities, the more information we try to give, and the more positive vibe we try to give into communities, you know, at the end of it all, the communities will thrive positively. One thing I think I've realized is that many communities are so confined into themselves that they don't get a chance to interact with others. And this has been so evident in the refugee settlements.
That was Lopaye Sambro, a young South Sudanese activist who is in Washington with the Young African Leadership Initiatives, also known as the Mandela Fellowship. He was speaking with me yesterday here at VOA. We now turn to Cameroon, where the government has reopened 40 schools on its northern border with Nigeria. While students are happy they can return to school, many of their teachers are absent and have been replaced by troops from the multinational joint task force still fighting the Islamist Boko Haram. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Lameni, Cameroon.
Children at the government primary school Limani dance with joy as they meet each other in class for the first time in 4 years. Their school is one of 40 near northern Cameroon's border with Nigeria that authorities reopened this week, citing improved security. Cameroon closed around 60 schools in the area from December 2014 because of the threat from Boko Haram, the Islamist militant group whose name roughly translates as non-Islamic education is a sin, had launched an all-out assault on villages near the Lake Chad area. Cameroon says hundreds of Boko Haram fighters attacked and torched schools, including the Limani Primary School. Ibrahim Nasuru was 9 years old when the school was shot. He and his parents fled to a neighboring village where Nasuru was unable to attend school. He says when he was told that their school in Limani had been reopened, he shouted with joy because he can now have an education. Cameroon authorities are touting the lack of a major Boko Haram attack for the past year and are urging parents to return their children to the reopened schools. Troops are protecting the schools, they say. But parents are reluctant to trust promises of safety. Only about 20% of the students have come back. Teachers are also noticeably absent.
Can you tell me the seven days of the week? What's the 7 days of the week in English?
The 7 day of the week.
In Limani Primary School's Class 5, troops from the Multinational Joint Task Force have traded their weapons for teaching manuals and chalk. Cameroon-born Staff Corporal Blaise Foncon says teaching is part of their social outreach program.
We have humanitarian line of operation. In that humanitarian line of operation, you have, of course, this school situation. Through their school, if they really know what they are going to do here, they will be engineers, they will be teachers, they will be doctors, and I'm sure that they will change this country.
Classroom teacher Edison Abuno says despite assurances of their safety, most of his teaching colleagues do not wish to return. And between Boko Haram's attacks and kidnappings, the villagers hiding in fear, he says the fate of many former students is still not known.
We used to have about 500 to 600 pupils, but we had about 200. Most of the parents, they don't tell us what happened to their children. So we are confronted with situation where we cannot easily explain what happened to the child.
Abuno notes classes only started on September 3rd, so he says it is too early to say if more teachers and students will return. Cameroon is giving absent teachers 2 weeks to come back for their job. Mayor of Fotokol Town, Abuzari Mahamat, says the government has promised to rebuild schools that Boko Haram damaged.
Force mixte multinationale se propose de venir réfectionner certaines salles de classe.
He says the engineering corps of the multinational joint task force, who are fighting Boko Haram, has promised to construct new classes and repair those that were destroyed. Mahamat says thanks to the presence of the troops, peace is returning and children can now go to school. But Mahamat acknowledges that reconstruction has been slow because contractors also worry that fighting could return. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Limani, Northern Cameroon.
That's our show for this Thursday. We'll now leave you with Isaka number one with his peace song. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. We would like to hear what you think about this show. You can find us at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can contact us on our Facebook. Our Facebook title is South Sudan in Focus. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Aga tomon binagis Nso wandi kore Rujal tomon bikalaso Abo had bikore Iyal tomon biwoduro Jidoza tu bikore Gelba towo biwaja. Leshuno minali safi shakilu badontana Ashan mono minali safi ferigu badontana Kalam shuno minali safi lagbatu nufustana kala mono ina lisa bizulo mombadontana kelina rija geni fo wata.